turnabout is fair play, I guess, but this is a little more dramatic than I had expected.
I still think if we asked how much people would pay to get a service back, you would win.
That's true. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Council will come back to order. Call the roll, please, Carla.
Fish.
Here.
Saltzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Fritz.
Here.
Hales.
Here. And could you read the item, please?
Item 573, appeal of Northwest District Association against the Design Commission's decision to conditionally approve the application for the Riverscape Apartments, a four-building complex to be located on the east side of Northwest Front Avenue between Northwest 16th and 18th Avenues, LU12-212602, DZM GWAD.
Thank you. And City Attorney, could you go through the procedural requirements here?
This is an on-the-record hearing, which means you must limit your testimony to material and issues in the record. We'll begin with a staff report by the Bureau of Development Services staff for approximately 10 minutes. Following the staff report, the council will hear from interested persons in the following order. The appellant will go first and will have 10 minutes to present his or her case. Following the appellant, persons who support the appeal will go. Each person will have 3 minutes to speak to council. The principal opponent, in this case the applicant, will then have 15 minutes to address the city council and rebut the appellant's presentation. If there is no principal opponent, council will move directly to testimony from persons who oppose the appeal. After the principal opponent, the council will hear from persons who oppose the appeal. Again, each person will have 3 minutes. Finally, the appellant will have 5 minutes to rebut the presentation of the opponents. Council may then close the hearing, deliberate, and take a vote on the appeal. If the vote is tentative, the council will set a future date for adoption of findings and a final vote on the appeal. If council takes a final vote today, that will conclude the matter before council. I'd like to announce several guidelines for those who will be addressing council today. First, the evidentiary record is closed. Because this is an on-the-record hearing, the hearing is to decide only if, in this case, the Design Commission made the correct decision based on the evidence that was presented to it. This means you must limit your remarks to arguments based on the record compiled by the Design Commission. You may refer to evidence that was previously submitted to the Design Commission. You may not submit new evidence today that was not submitted to them. If your argument includes new evidence or issues, you may be interrupted and reminded you must limit your testimony to the record. The council will not consider the new information, and it will be rejected in the City Council's final decision. Second, if you believe a person who addressed council today improperly presented new evidence or presented a legal argument that relies on evidence not in the record, you may object to that argument today. Third, finally, under state law, only issues that were raised before the Design Commission may be raised in this appeal to council. If you believe another person has raised issues today that were not previously raised, you may object to the council's consideration. Finally, if the applicant fails to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with enough specificity to allow council to respond, the applicant will be precluded from bringing an action for damages in circuit court. And that concludes my presentation.
All right. Thank you. So now it's time for any disclosures. Do any members of the council wish to declare a potential conflict of interest?
Mayor, I want to declare that my staff met with Lee Novak, who is listed as the developer, did not review any material outside of the record, and I have not been briefed on it.
Okay. Any other potential conflicts of interest or ex parte contacts? Site visits, Commissioner Novick?
I actually got a couple of emails about this issue that stuck through to my email that I noticed were about this issue and did not read, I did receive them.
Okay. And my staff member, Ed McNamara, and I visited the site today ourselves. We spoke to no one, we simply wanted to view the context for the hearing. So does anyone have any questions or concerns or challenges for council members' declarations? If not, then let's begin the hearing with a staff report.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and commissioners. Mark Wallhood, BDS. I'm here today representing the Design Commission decision and a design review. I'm going to go through this kind of quickly, so stop me if you need to. Again, case number is LU12-212602DZMGWAD, Riverscape Apartments. Just a brief overview of the process. On April 18th this year, Design Commission made their final decision at a third public hearing. They did impose 8 additional design-related conditions of approval. I'll be going through later. An appeal was filed on May 17th, and we're here today for the appeal hearing. We have followed all the code-required public notices. The site was posted, and neighbors have been notified. A brief summary of the proposal. It is 4 5-story apartment buildings on 2 long linear vacant blocks in the Riverscape neighborhood. The project has 243 dwelling units, garage parking for 236 cars with loading and bike parking spaces, and there are 2 public courtyards at the middle of each of the 2 blocks. The applicant's pursuing a 1-to-1 floor area increase through the percent for art bonus option, which is a separate process through the Regional Arts and Culture Council, exempt from land use. They do need that to get their FAR, their mass. We have a total of 6 reviews altogether: design review, greenway review, a modification to allow some tandem or stacked parking spaces in the garage, a modification to reduce the vertical clearance for the loading spaces, which are in the underground garages, a modification to reduce the width for 104 of the parking spaces because of structural support columns in the underground basement, and an adjustment to reduce the required loading spaces from 4 to 3. Just quickly through the zoning and identifying the site here, it's the 4 lots rather in red. It's just east of Front Avenue, a little bit north of the Fremont Bridge. The site is RX, Central Residential High Density Residential Zone. It allows a 100-foot height limit. There is no minimum vehicle parking required. There is a requirement for loading and bike parking. The approval criteria in question and the appeal are the design guidelines, so it's Central City Fundamentals and River District Design Guidelines. The remainder of the review criteria are from greenway review, adjustment, and modifications. This is an aerial view of the site. It's 2 long rectangular blocks in orange here on this plan. It's lots 9 and 10 on the north block and 11 and 12 on the south block, so it's 9 to 12 north to south. You can connect down south to downtown and the Pearl District on Front Avenue and then 17th Avenue, which sort of intersects across Front at the exact middle of the site. I just have a few site visit pictures here. Looking north from 17th Avenue, it's 2 just grassy open parcels right now, sort of serves as an unofficial dog park between the Riverscape development and Front Avenue. This is looking north at the north block and then just flipping around looking south at the south block. You can see how close the Fremont Bridge is just to the south. The existing development includes this 8-story Pacifica condominium building on the north edge of the site, and then these 3-story townhomes. There's 2 or 3 different design versions of the townhomes, but they're all 3-story massing between Riverscape Street and the river. There's a really nice public greenway trail along the river that includes a dock that extends out over the water and some nice public art. You can see multiple east-west connections that connect from Riverscape through Riverscape Street through to the river. There are additionally supplemental little pathways between these public easements that go between the townhomes. This is showing that central connection through, in alignment with 17th, through from the Greenway Trail back to Riverscape Street and Front Avenue in the distance. You can see the traffic signal. Just another view on the south end of the southernmost townhomes and one of the walkways through to the river. Directly across Front Street to the site is the Dockside Tavern, which is something of a landmark. And then this is just another shot looking back right through 17th Avenue across from the west side of Front and sort of showing the direct view you get at the street level from Front to the river. The project went through several changes. It came in originally and went to the first hearing with this proposal you see before you. four nearly identical buildings, two 46-foot wide public courtyards between each of the two clustered buildings, and there were some deep setbacks, as you'll notice in this drawing, from the side streets or from the avenues. Neighbors raised concerns about the project providing inadequate parking, about the scale and impacts to light, air, and view for the adjacent townhomes, and suggesting that there be greater design diversity among the buildings. Design Commission at the first hearing raised concerns about the commercial space and where they were located, how they were designed, similar concerns about the design of the buildings raised by the neighbors, and some additional suggestions that they improve and soften the courtyard spaces. These red arrows just sort of indicate the original design, which had framed views along the public greenways, courtyards out to the river, and a little bit more space on the edges. The second proposal came back for another hearing a couple weeks later. The buildings had been simplified, a little bit more brick. They added some more seating in the courtyards, relocated and modified the commercial spaces. Neighbors continue to raise concerns about the way the commercial spaces were oriented to Front Avenue, about how the project oriented itself to the river, with suggestions that there be more direct industrial design cues taken in the project, with also concerns about weather protection and site visibility and clearances and parking. I'm just going to point out here, Kurt Kruger is here from Portland Transportation if there's any transportation questions. There is no minimum parking in this zone, and there are no parking-related criteria for design review. There are some issues being looked at with Front Avenue about restriping it, changing the way the lanes are configured, and on-street parking, but that's tied to a project across the street to the west that's going through a zone change. So we don't really have a hook, is what I would say, in the design review to talk so much about transportation. Design Commission concerns on the second proposal were sort of echoing the first, but elaborating, simplify the designs further, make two of the four buildings more distinct, concerned that there were just sort of two similar buildings, specific suggestions for a dock along Front Avenue, a suggestion that they shift the buildings out towards the side streets to increase the size of the courtyards in between, and to create a sort of terminus or visual point at the end of 17th Avenue where it hits the building on lot 10.
Excuse me.
Quickly, this shows the final and third proposal that was brought to a hearing on April 18th. The middle two buildings have been completely redesigned. The two end buildings were further simplified. The floor level was lowered along Front, so you have the sort of almost at grade floor level on Front, facing Front Avenue for the commercial spaces. Canopies and docks were added along Front Avenue. The courtyards were redesigned and increased from 46 to 100 feet wide, and I mentioned already the buildings removed. Neighbors continue to raise concerns about on-street parking and visibility concerns, river views, and suggestions that the building further be lowered down towards Front Avenue. Design Commission really was pushing for some further refinement at this stage, even on the third version. But the applicant was not interested in extending the timeline. Design Commission went through about an hour and a half of deliberations and finally came up with eight specific design-related conditions of approval that allowed them to approve it. I'll just point out in this drawing as sort of illustrative of the change that was made. Design Commission felt that this revised drawing, and I have these red arrows to sort of show the framed views to the river, because there's a lot in the guidelines about addressing the river, that these sort of better framed the main pedestrian connections out to the river, and by increasing the width of these green spaces, sort of enlarged the oblique views or angled indirect views you can get from Front Avenue to the river. I'll also point out that the guidelines are really more talking about the public experience, so public pedestrians and passersby, and how they experience at the pedestrian level the connection to the river, as opposed to residents of the apartments getting views or having balconies for their private views to the river. Just quickly, a couple other images of the final design showing the revised sort of warehouse-like inspiration for the two buildings in the middle, the sort of barrel vault feature on the middle of the building.
And just quickly, the revised courtyard design that got more than twice as big as they were originally. Real quickly, because I've gone over my 10 minutes. Design Commission imposed these in blue 8 additional conditions of approval. I won't go through them specifically. And in the appeal, I'll let the neighborhood represent their appeal issues with just simply the statement that 33.5 feet, which is where one of the conditions required all the floors be lowered to, is as low as they can go because of the floodplain. They can't really go any lower than the conditions already requiring them to go for grade in terms of lowering it to the sidewalk. And council has your standard 3 alternatives, which is grant the appeal and overturn Design Commission decision of approval, deny the appeal but modify the decision with some direction, or deny the appeal and uphold the Design Commission decision.
Okay, thank you. Questions for staff? All right, thank you so much. Now we will move to the appellant. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and commissioners. My name is John Bradley. I reside at 2350 Northwest Johnson. I am chair of the NWDA Planning Committee, and I'm here today speaking on their behalf. While there can be little doubt that the project before you today is improved over its first iteration, and that's thanks to the Design Commission, we feel that more work needs to be done. The Commission was constrained by the 120-day limit, as you can see by the multiple conditions of approval imposed on this project, and by the less than the unanimous vote on their part. First, the palette of materials for the facades is less than coherent and represents an odd mixture seemingly done for graphic effect or in an attempt to break up 4 identically masked buildings. Next, the pedestrian environment through and around the buildings needs to be reevaluated and better planned. Currently, the courtyards and plazas do not respond well to either the public or the private realm. The ramps and transition grades are awkward, especially in relationship to the raised planter, and no real thought has been put forward as to who will use these areas and what needs they will serve. Because this set of buildings is in a special design area, the River District, one must ask, do they enhance, identify, and reinforce the waterfront area? We feel they do not. This assemblage of buildings could be located anywhere. There is little response. There is little commercial space in these buildings that would help to establish this area as a 20-minute community and reinforce its identity. And there is little response or orientation toward the river. In short, this project needs to work to establish itself in the context of the river and as part of a full community. Thank you.
Hello, good afternoon. I'm going to read testimony on my own behalf and on behalf of one of our committee members who was unable to attend but also prepared written testimony. So to begin from my own part, my name is Gustavo Cruz. I live at 2224 Northwest Johnson Street, and I'm also speaking on behalf of the Planning Committee for the Northwest District Association. I'd like to highlight 3 particular areas of concern that were part of our appeal of the riverscape design. First, the proposed pedestrian courtyards emphasize movement through those spaces rather than focusing on more typical residential uses, like simply sitting, reading, or interacting with your neighbors. The buildings are not oriented toward the courtyards through their entryways or lobbies, and the apartments lack balconies and more generous windows overlooking the courtyards that would interact with the open spaces. We would prefer to see more of a plaza-style design and buildings and spaces that respond to and reinforce the context of the site. Second, the sidewalk context is awkward, with semi-private residential patios and awkward ramps and grade transitions. Overall, our committee would prefer a more simplified approach without the loading dock features and with floor levels at the sidewalk level to the extent feasible in the commercial areas and the live workspaces. Third, our committee felt strongly that the buildings do not take full advantage of their proximity to the river. Although there are visual obstructions between some apartments and the river, our committee members felt that at least the ends of the buildings could be redesigned to offer some opportunity to view the river. We felt that the buildings were similar to buildings found elsewhere in the city, with nothing particularly significant about them to signal that they are near the river and waterfront. Next, I'll read the testimony of Greg Thiessen, one of our committee members. Greg, his testimony, by the way, you should have in hard copy form, and it includes some photos of other buildings in the area. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this project with you. As has been summarized by others, one of our main concerns with these structures is their design in response to their river setting. The structures fail to respond to or take advantage of their location 200 feet from the Willamette River. The city is known for celebrating and enriching its waterfront. Unfortunately, there's nothing about these buildings that speaks to that rich history. This is a unique site within the city and within the Northwest Neighborhood District. The four narrow blocks within 200 feet of the river are unlike any other site on the downtown or south waterfront. The narrow blocks are only the depth of the average city lot, about 100 feet. How do you take advantage of such a site that respects the code requirements? Here's what the applicant has proposed. The major outdoor apartment spaces are on narrow end facades, balconies that face the adjacent building. There doesn't appear to be any other outdoor spaces, terraces, decks, or balconies that face Nato or the river. The buildings could just as readily be on Southeast Division or North Vancouver. Nothing about them says welcome to the waterfront. There are alternative building designs in the city that might suggest a path forward. There are two that come to mind, 937 Northwest Gleason and Waterfront Pearl. The 937 Gleason building is located at Northwest 9th and Gleason, with a long facade facing Gleason Street. The building is about 75 feet in depth. It includes real balconies for each unit on every facade, narrow and long. These elements would work on a shorter building, such as at Riverscape. And there are photos in your materials that show that. The Waterfront Pearl buildings adjacent to Albers Mill on Nato are the second set of buildings comparable to the Riverscape apartments. They are in very similar riverfront context, though in this case right on the water. The design elements of this building that are transferable to the Riverscape apartments are the multiple balconies, the considerable breaks in the facades, the narrowing of the buildings as they progress toward the river, and the faceted building ends. Though each Waterfront Pearl building is similar in shape, each building is quite different at the Nato facade. They share the same materials but use them in different ways, varying the height at which darker cementitious material is utilized. Overall, the color palette of the material is lighter and complements the river, water, and sky rather than contradict or ignore as at Riverscape. The NWDA urges you to allow for additional discussion to address the shortcomings of the Riverscape apartments. Greg Thiessen. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for the appellant?
I do. I think you mentioned in your appeal that you'd like a stronger block structure. What did you mean by that?
You know, I think originally we wanted the all of the streets to line up as they do in the rest of Portland, and here we've got everything a little bit off, so you don't see streets going through, and you just have these very long kind of wall buildings that obstruct that.
And is the third proposal better in your opinion, or still not enough?
It's still not enough. You know, to a certain extent, as I mentioned in my testimony, I really feel that the Design Commission was going in the right direction with a lot of this stuff, but because the record was, you know, the 120-day limit was reached, they were not capable of further discussing a lot of this stuff and actually getting it right and getting it down. And in doing such, you know, I feel that this is an incomplete project in many respects, especially given, as I said in my testimony, where it's located.
And what were the other things that the Design Commission were considering if they'd have had more time?
You know, I don't want to speak for the Design Committee. I know Tad Savinar, I think, would agree with us, and I think he says so in his last comments, that, you know, this doesn't look like it belongs in the river. It just belongs. It belongs somewhere else. They're just buildings. And then when you look at the surrounding environment, you know, again, this is not a 20-minute community. This is going to end up being a cul-de-sac. There's very little commercial here, and there's certainly not going to be a lot of stuff that people are going to use on a regular basis. So it seems like kind of a cul-de-sac and a wall, and, it, you know, I think some more stuff could be done with this.
And the photographs that you've given from Greg Thiessen, those are helpful examples of things that do look more riverish. I thought your appeal was very well written, and then I saw that, in fact, there aren't very many good views to the river because of the development that's in front of it.
Right. But, you know, if we could get more balconies, maybe reshape the end of those buildings so that they're pointed out a little bit more to the river, I think you'd find that you had a better building and a better project.
And was consideration given to having taller buildings so that you keep the FAR but were able to get up above?
That had been mentioned, especially in terms of varying the heights of the building, but that went nowhere.
And what was the Design Commission's vote?
I think it was 4-2.
4-2, okay. And actually, I have a question for staff, so I think that's all my questions for you for right now. Thank you.
Okay, other questions for the appellants? May need you back, but thank you.
Great, thank you.
Is there anyone signed up as supporters of the appeal?
Yes. We have three people signed up.
Okay.
I believe the first name is Sejero Myers, Vita Nomura, and Colin O'Brady.
Come on up,
yes,
please.
Yes, come on up.
Mm-hmm. Afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Cheryl Myers. I live at 1742 Northwest Riverscape. I'm also chair of the HOA for Riverscape. I also am a business owner at 1826 Northwest Thurman. This unique property falls within the River District guidelines. Previously, Jameson English did submit a written commentary on this project and why it does not meet the River District guidelines. This document is a part of the record, and if you have not read it, I would encourage you to read it. In preparing to speak today, I reread the River District guidelines, and if you have not done so, before you make any decision on this project, I would ask that you do so. Based on the guidelines of the River District, this project fails for many reasons. Most significant, I have noted on page 10, guideline A1, it should link the Willamette River to the community, reinforcing the river's linkage to the community, and the project should celebrate the river or draw attention to the river. Page 36, guideline A9-1. When developing a gateway locations, provide a distinct sense of entry and exit that relates to the special qualities of the areas that have a sense of arrival. And most significant, page 41, guideline C-1. Increase river view opportunities to emphasize the river district ambience via features that link the views to the river and link views to the river district activities. Most important in this guideline is this, orientating open space to emphasize, not just access the river view. The current residential units neighboring this site have been carefully designed so that each residence has outdoor space, thus leaving large walkways, etc., for the use of those accessing the northern edge of the Willamette Greenway. The walkways are used by those who fish, run, ride bikes, walk, and bring their families to the river. As the walkways are wide, open, and flowing to the river, the community feels welcome and free to come and go. And in the lovely pictures that Mark presented, you can see the open space that is currently in existing and feels welcoming to the community. The project under consideration does not meet the River District guidelines, as it does not invite the community to access the river. The developer, instead of providing outdoor spaces for the units, wants to use the courtyards as common areas for these units. These courtyards he also wants to use as access point for the community to the river. Using these courtyards for dual purposes serves no one. The residents will not use them if they feel people will be walking, biking through them, and the community will not use them because they will feel like they're invading private property. And certainly if you are biking on the Greenway, there is not a straight access from the Greenway to the street. In an article from the April 13th issue of the Northwest Examiner titled What's Wrong with the Pearl, there is a section entitled River Orientation. To quote the articles, neighbors feel separated from the river, unable to readily see, touch, or experience the water in their daily lives. This project simply separates the community from the river. As the city of Portland rightfully deals with our lovely river and how to bring the community to the river and the river to the community, projects like this need to be carefully considered, and decisions need to be based on how our lovely river and our community come together. When considering your decision on this project, I would ask that you consider the wisdom of the country of Bhutan. Bhutan has a government policy of GNH, called Gross National Happiness. Decisions are based not only on economics, but also on the welfare of the community as a whole. The decision on this project, I would encourage your council, should be based on the needs of the community and the movement of our city to enhance the lovely river that we all live on. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I have a question.
Question? Sorry, ma'am. Come back.
Thank you, sorry.
Thank you.
Do people currently use the pathways? They look like they're pathways, not streets.
They're open
between.
Pathways, and yes, they are used heavily. I live right on the corner, and on a weekend, you will have on any given day several hundred people. You have people fishing, you have people biking, you have people running, you have families, you're bringing children down. Because the Pearl area, is as it moves our way, it's the only open access point to the Greenway. It's right there.
So I'm not clear why, since they currently use these relatively narrow pathways through.
Not narrow.
Well, then the ones that are proposed are wider in one case. So why I'm not, could you explain to me more about why you think that people won't use those?
Because they're not open pathways. They've got planters, they've got benches. They don't. If you're coming to the community, you're going to see them as courtyards for the apartments. Mm. You're not going to feel free to ask. We have these wide open spaces for people to come and go up and down. And it is a biking community. And so when they come off of our wide open paths, they hit these courtyards that are blocked. And then just the average person is going to look at them and see them as private areas for these apartments and not as open pathways to the river.
So even a straight path through the courtyards that lines up with the path through the existing development would be better?
It would be an improvement, yeah. But then it leaves the people living in the apartments because they don't have. We all have outside spaces that are attached to our units, so we can enjoy the river and still leave these wide open spaces.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Is there, while we're on that subject, from the perspective of those of you who live in the district, this part of the district now, is there a preferred route from, say, 17th and Front to the river other than the most direct one? In other words, where do you want people other than neighbors flowing to and from the Greenway?
Where do we want them to come? From all ends, from the 18th, from 17th, from 16th. Because as everything develops, we feel the whole area should be open. To the community as a whole.
Okay, thank you. Further questions? Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
And there were some other folks signed up in support of the appeal.
Avita Nomura and a Colin O'Brady. You both come on up.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. All right, mine will be pretty short. I'm Vita Nomura, and I live at 1734 Northwest Riverscape Street. And I'm just speaking about the parking, even though I know that the project satisfies the guidelines. We realize as property owners in discussing this of just the impacts. We just wanted to emphasize again because of the unique location of our site. Because with most 50% of households in Oregon having two cars, the addition of these units and the removal of eight of the existing limited parking spaces should make us all stop and consider what's best for the community and neighborhood. Right now, we have very limited on-street parking, irregular TriMet service with none on Sunday. We don't have a trolley service yet. We don't have MAX. There's really no official bike paths, no parking, big parking garages. There's no parking in front of this property. So lots of time, as Cheryl mentioned, we have people that come on the weekends to park their cars and use the area for biking and fishing and enjoying the waterfront. What ends up happening is it fills all the limited parking spaces that are available, and then there's like a lot right near, a gravel lot in front of the Pacifica building that people end up parking. So already we feel like, especially on weekends, that it's overfilling and we don't have space or if we have visitors. So we just all anticipate that's actually the number one thing we all talk about is the parking. So the extremely limited parking makes this site unlike others on the waterfront and in the Pearl. So we just ask that these issues be taken into consideration when making a decision on this project.
Thank you.
How much parking do you have in your development? per unit?
Right now, each unit in our development has two cars.
Thank you.
My name's Colin O'Brady. I'm an owner at 1720 Northwest Riverscape. 2 years ago, when this was a new development, I was very excited to move in there because I believe this area was going to be developed. I want to make it clear that we're definitely for development in this area and saw this as being a part of sort of the beginning of a nice development down here. I think that Portland has had a tremendous number of visionaries developing the river district or the river area over the last series of decades, from Tom McCall removing the highways to create Waterfront Park between the Steel Bridge and the Hawthorne Bridge and beyond. And certainly an improvement by Mayor Katz in the 90s to create the East Blank Esplanade over the last 20 years. And then fast forward to the last 10 or 15 years or so, we've seen development in the South Waterfront. And as our city expands, we're now getting to the point where we're developing, being conscious of developing the river beyond both the Markham Bridge on the south and the Fremont Bridge on the north. One of the most exciting projects I think the city's facing right now is what to do with the Zidell site and figuring that out. I know it was a failed attempt with putting Nike down there, but there's a lot of other exciting things on the books of how to create thriving access to the river through that site. And we've got OHSU coming in there that's already obviously underway, as well as the pedestrian bridge with the MAX line coming over there. So I think those are great examples of how the city's done well to develop the river district. I think this is the outer edge on the north side, and we have a great opportunity here for development. Fortunately, I think with these buildings that are on the books here, it doesn't take advantage of many of that. Like many of the people who have already testified, these four buildings could pretty much be anywhere. And I think one of my largest concerns is there's a huge opportunity here for mixed use. I think the commercial spaces are extremely inadequate in this development. This can be and will be a destination for people. Right now it already is to some degree, but if you have commercial spaces that inspire development on the first floors of buildings that are designed here, I think people will come, want to come and stay on weekends, whether there comes a destination. You can access the river in a meaningful way, and then you can go to a coffee shop or whatever. The developers met with our HOA last week to kind of go over, to have a dialogue, and one of his points was that the commercial real estate broker said that there's nobody that wants to move in commercial space here. I would argue that that's untrue, as seen by within a quarter mile of this site, both Olympic Provisions and Ristretto Roasters have moved in, which are two marquee Portland establishments. Know a thing or two about development in Portland. They've moved into this area, as well as Dockside, which has been there for 20 or 30 years, is a sort of a destination restaurant people come to. So in closing, I think that there could be better use to create commercial space, and I think everyone else has touched on the parking and the issues of how the buildings themselves can interact better with the river to create a really thriving river district area.
Great. Thank you. Yep. Questions? Thanks very much. Okay, no one else signed up in support of the appeal, is that right? So let's now hear from the principal opponent to the appeal, applicant. Good afternoon. Do you have PowerPoint slides there? Okay. Carla can help you get those queued up for us.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales. Good afternoon. Members of the council. Steve Pfeiffer, 1120 Northwest Cooch, 97204. And I'm an attorney with Perkins Coie, Land Use Council, two four properties in this project. And let me begin. I'll offer a few comments at the beginning, including clearing up a procedural question. And then I'll be followed by Lee Novak, who will, to my far right, is a principal with four property and a project manager and most intimately involved with the project as it's evolved at the site. And then following him in a bit of an impromptu performance is Steve Shapiro. But given Commissioner Fritz's questions about the park in particular, and the emphasis on the testimony, I think it'd be good if we gave him a chance to explain how that park evolved and why it looks the way it does. So he'll follow, and again, I asked him 2 minutes ago to make this presentation, so bear with him. procedurally at the outset, there is, as there often is, a bit of an open question as to the 120-day clock and whether it was extended with the continuances in front of the Design Commission and the like. And frankly, in working with Lindley and BDS staff, I think we just take a cautious approach and say there was no extensions penciled per se. I'm here today to confirm that an extension to 120-day clock is granted to the end of July, and we'll go further if we need to. But I think we've all agreed that we should be able to resolve this with final action by council by the end of July, and if we need to, again, I can extend it again. But that should put to rest the 120-day clock issue, and we've got that much time and more if needed. Otherwise, because, frankly, this is a bit of an unusual case for a land use appeal, most of the appeals that we've seen over the years here and in other communities involve not what something looks like, but whether it should be there at all. What you often hear are map amendment requests, somebody attempting to rezone from commercial to industrial. Actually, that's not very frequent. From industrial to commercial is more frequent. Conditional use permits, master plans, any number of institutional master plans. Those are questions of policy choice for the council. Those are questions of, as a matter of policy, should we change the existing map designation? Should we change the uses that are allowed at that location? Should we increase height? Should we increase FAR? All those are legitimately policy choices based upon a desire to change established policy. That established policy is important because it provides certainty to all of us. The developer, the landowner, the neighbor, the conservationist, depending on the setting, and most importantly, the city itself. Because by having in place, in Oregon more than anywhere else in the country, established policies, we know what, at least generally, we can expect. That's not what we have here. And so, frankly, you're not going to hear a lot of somewhat esoteric discussion between two lawyers about what a criterion means. This is a design review case. It's really a function of, we know what the policy is for this place, all the way down to the subdivision plat, which dictates the locations of the streets, which dictates the, when it was approved as a plat, the existing east-west public access easements that extend through our property and through the condos to the west or to the east that you just heard. Those are fixed, as are the street locations. There's not much we can do, and as Lee will tell you in a minute, there are even more constraints associated with it. It really comes down to a judgment by the council in the same way the DRC was called upon to make a judgment and a determination of what it should look like, how it should function, both for the occupants, the community at large, and the residents in the immediate vicinity. It's down to a design question, and did the DRC, after three hearings and many hours of testimony, get it right or as close to right as possible? And with that, I'm really going to turn it over to Lee at this point. And is that a commission?
Well, council, since you've highlighted that this is a somewhat unusual proceeding for us, what is your position on our role and whether and to what extent we owe any deference to the Design Commission on this question? Each of us has our own aesthetic guideposts. So what is, as an advocate in this proceeding, trying to give us some advice as to what we're doing here, what is your best sense of our legal role and the scope of that role?
Well, it's a fair question, and I've asked myself that over the last day or so because I've tried to figure out how I would perceive it, as I always do, from you, from your perspective as a decision maker. I've been on the Design Commission. I kind of have a sympathy to that process as well. Let me answer that this way, Commissioner. In the other cases that I've mentioned, be it a map amendment, be it should a conditional use be allowed, or whatever the criterion is before you, you are the creator. You've inherited from your predecessors, but you're the keeper of the language in the case of what a criterion means. And when the Planning Commission or a hearings officer says it means X, you are the ultimate backstop because the council is the creator and keeper of the code. That's why you are entitled to deference, as you well know, on appeal. Those are pretty easy. You substitute your judgment as the keeper of the community's best circumstances, and you substitute your judgment there. A hearings officer makes a call. It's a technical legal answer. He reads the words. Greg will tell you he does not feel empowered in any way to change them. And he'll make an interpretation subject to your review. This is a little different in my mind. You've created a board in the form of the Design Review Commission. These people put in long hours. They're very experienced, some in architecture, some in landscape architecture, one at least as a developer. You've created that board, and you ask them to participate to a great degree on a frequent level with a lot of effort, in this case three times, three different settings, plus the DARs that they typically would have to do. I guess I would submit there is some deference due to the Design Commission. If for no other reason than you need to continue to empower them to feel free to make the determinations with highly subjective criteria, as you well know, things like build corners are not exactly easy to deal with. I would submit there is a deference due. They're the keeper of it. And most importantly, they're also a keeper of a collective wisdom of the design process as it's evolved, not just in the Pearl District, but in the city as a whole. They sit through multiple cases every month, and they build on their experience. They make mistakes, and they learn from them, and they're reminded by these and other people that they made one in the last case, and they address that. You don't see it as frequently.
So let me just follow up on that point, counsel. Let's use the analogy that therefore we're sort of like a referee, and we're trying to make sure that procedurally things have gone properly, and let's say that we adopted your view of deference. In the presentation that we received, we were told that because of time constraints, they don't feel they were able to do their job as fully as they would like. So they put conditions, but they weren't able to go through all the steps they wanted. Now obviously, we can't just have an open-ended process and say, you know, take as long as you want, get extensions, and come back in 2 or 3 years. But should that be a concern to us?
2 points. Number one, let me qualify my deference to say I think you do owe them deference, but I think you also are charged with and must make a decision on whether they got it right. I think in making that, there's deference due them that isn't due me or others who have testified or even for or even BDS staff. They deserve more, but it's not absolute. You do have to see if they got it right. I simply don't agree with that assessment, and I don't agree with it in the sense that I wasn't at the last hearing, and I do know that having been through the Design Commission, both as an applicant and as a commissioner, three hearings, one of which I think, as I recall, was 4 hours, is an exceedingly lengthy design review. I've had 25-story condo towers go through in one hearing. That's not what happened here. So they put a lot of energy into this. Secondly, I don't accept the notion, quite frankly, that they were cut off, stopped short, and they would have continued to evolve this project to a significant degree. And I do say so for no other reason than this. When you look at those conditions at the back, they are not sweeping conditions. They are very, very minor housekeeping conditions. Delegating to staff limited discretion on the public art question. Modifying some of the architectural coverings on one of the buildings, a very direct one, but they had the opportunity and they took it. When they got to the end of the deliberation, they had a deliberation, they had a vote, they imposed some conditions, and I simply believe those conditions reflect what was left that they wanted to resolve to make this approvable, and they did so. I don't believe they did this by default so they could go home at 5, and that's the implication.
Thank
you. Just to follow up on that, I mean, somewhere there exists a record, I assume, and did anybody say it?
Hopefully there's a box here somewhere, Lily.
Well, and maybe this isn't the question for you, Steve, but did somebody say at that last hearing that, you know, we're going to invoke the 120-day rule if we don't get a decision from you tonight?
And at that point, I'll have to leave it to Lee because he was present. Well, Lee and Robert Lieb, who's also here, by the way. I forgot to introduce Robert, the architect, Robert Lieb, who's an architect for the first phase of the condo building in Pacifica as well as this. But he's here today and is available for questions. But
I can leave that.
Saltzman,
staff can come back and answer
that,
too.
Lee will, you know, share this sense of that one. Yeah.
I'm Lee Novak. I'm vice president for four. We did at that time, at about 2 hours into the last hearing, say that we'd like to try and get to a resolution that evening. And the DRC did take the time at that point to say, did decide instead of rejecting, which was one of their options at that time, right? They could have said, well, we're going to deny and you start over. They felt that they were far enough along, that we were close enough to a conclusion, that we could, through the next hour and a half of conversation, reach a set of conditions that would satisfy the small number of outstanding issues. So we wanted to drive the process and focus everybody. I think they felt like we were close enough. They felt like the project wouldn't benefit from another whole hearing, that this was an opportunity to get to a conclusion.
Other questions before we move on? I have one, and that is, I'm not sure I understood your point in passing about the end of July. Are you suggesting that we further extend the 120?
Technically, Mayor, the 120-day clock, which begins, of course, on the day the application is deemed complete for 120 days through final city action, expired on May 29th. And I think from talking with staff and a bit with Lindley, there was a sense that the process was evolving and there was additional hearings in it, and there was an understanding I can appreciate from staff that maybe that was being extended by just agreeing to the continuance of the hearings. So when we had this, and appellants haven't raised this, I just want to clear up your record. I've suggested to the staff we take the conservative approach that it actually did run on May 29th, and I'm just going to here confirm on the record that it's extended at our initiation till July 30th, so there's no question about the 120-day and how much time you have. I don't see any reason to wonder whether it was a de facto extension because we agreed to a continuance. Okay. Let's just give it
all
an
right,
extension.
I get it. Thank you.
I just want to clear the record up.
Okay.
And with that, I want to get into the design and the questions you have, so I'm going to turn it over to Lee.
Can I get the PowerPoint, please?
And these are all images from the record, by the way.
Evening or afternoon, not quite evening yet. I know it's getting dark already out there, but wanted to talk to you a bit about the project goal.
Put your name into the record again.
I'm sorry. Lee Novak with Four Property Company. I wanted to talk to you quickly about the project goal, the site constraints that we faced when we first approached the site, and the design evolution, and then finally address some of the neighborhood concerns. But really, first, I want to start with the fact that this is our first project in the Portland area. We are incredibly excited to be here, and that this is, we think we do have a special location and a project that treats that special location with the deference and the importance that it deserves. Want to talk a bit about the project goal. Our goal was to give renters an opportunity to live close to the Pearl and downtown in nicely sized apartments with significant amenities, including nearly one-to-one parking and a LEED Gold rating. We're targeting rents that are somewhat below the high-rise development that's occurring in the Pearl. We think this is important because it allows for a diversity of incomes in the neighborhood. We're also providing a mix of unit types. So we have studios, one bedrooms and two bedrooms, ranging up to 1,160 square feet. And this allows for a diversity of households as well. And so we think rental apartments, especially in this neighborhood, especially in the Pearl, which is a neighborhood that has some challenges facing it in diversity of households with the high-rise development that's occurring, we think this is an excellent opportunity to create another housing type or diversity of housing type and increase the neighborhood's diversity.
On this slide, because the color scheme on this slide is a little different than the printed slide, could you just tell us, could you describe for us what is the color shading that you're using as best as you? So on the three different colors, how would you describe them?
Sure. The lower three floors, in these two buildings, the lower three floors are a sand-colored brick, a light-colored brick. And then the upper two floors are it's a vertical-ribbed, terracotta-colored cementitious product.
What product? I'm sorry?
I'm sorry.
Let's say the product.
It's a cementitious product. It's Cerraclad is the brand name of the product.
Yeah, okay.
So is it on the lower three floors, is that, for example, roughly the brick that is at Bud Clark Commons, sort of an off-white brick that's over by the train station, or perhaps, or even on the slide we saw earlier, which is the 921 building, the Hulse building, is that sort of off-white, creamy brick?
I didn't see that earlier slide, so I apologize. I'm not familiar enough with that building to dictate. But I would say it's a very similar color to what actually exists in the neighboring condos.
I see. And the terracotta piece above, is that more burnt orange, or is it more salmon, or is it more okra?
Mr. Lieb is standing by.
Yeah, I think I might bring up the architect. I have trouble picking out my tie, so you know, I think I'd rather allow the architect.
Here, Lieb.
Yeah, thanks. My name is Robert Lieb, Lieb Architects, 71 Southwest Oak Street, Portland. There are two different schemes. There are four buildings, and the two in the middle, they're flanking 17th Street, have a buff brick. It's a combination of three different blended Oregon bricks from Mutual Materials, so kind of a blended sandy buff color. there are three different, it's a blend of those three black bricks. And then for the first three floors, it looks like there's the ground floor is a different color, but that's just the shading factor of the rendering program. So they're basically, those three stories have brick in that range. And above there's a, I guess you would say, a kind of a rust color, the Cerraclad that's for the top three floors. It's a Japanese product, pretty sophisticated rib product. And then the flanking outdoor outside buildings are three layers, three levels of a red brick. It's pretty traditional in Portland, been used a lot. It's very similar to the brick that's across the street in the warehouse that's been there forever. So there will be three floors of that red brick. And then above that, we have a gray metal. So it's basically just two, that's the palette.
Okay, so four different materials, two kinds of brick, one cement.
Yeah, and there's actually, there is a Cerraclad up in that building too. I have to take a look at it. Okay. Yeah, there's, that actually relates to the other building. So there's kind of a tie between
what you said about the shading on the ground floor, because.
Yeah, it looks like a third brick.
It looked like it was
tricolor. That's part of the rendering program. They throw a shadow on there, so it's, I apologize for that.
Thank you.
I just wanted to spend a couple moments running through some of the site constraints very quickly. We're not directly on the river, but we are in the flood zone. I think that was mentioned by Mark earlier, and that does drive the first floor height to get the buildings out of the flood zone. It also creates some challenges with ADA later. As you probably all know, this was Pier 1 of the Port of Portland. An extensive cleanup of the soils was done in around 2000, 2001. There was an existing record of decision and no further action letter that allows for development on the site. But during that cleanup, soil contamination wasn't really removed below 15 feet of depth. And so we really have, in our approved soil management plan with DEQ, we've limited ourselves to only going 15 feet below the current depth. And so that drives somewhat why the design of our garage level and how we deal with that. We also have another ADA challenge in that, another site challenge in that we drop 3 feet in elevation from Riverscape to front. Riverscape is 3 feet higher than front. And so that drove much of the design with the docks and the pier and as well. We've talked a lot about the odd shapes. This is not your standard 200-foot Portland block. It's 86 by 230 feet, so it does constrain that. We do have two pedestrian easements, and those are important to point out. Both the courtyards, the reason the 46 feet started was that there's a 46-foot-wide pedestrian easement as required by the plat. On the northern two lots, there's also a 30-foot sewer easement, which runs concurrently. So on the southern two lots, we have a parking garage that extends the entire distance below both buildings and below the open space. On the northern two lots, we do have to split the garage because we have this sewer easement running through the middle of the site. So we can run under the pedestrian easement on the south, but not on the north. We also have an overlay district limitation on the length of the projects, or on the length of the buildings, based on the amount of open space that is required on each of the lot. We are within 6 inches. Each building is within 6 inches of the maximum length. So that's important as we talk about this issue of lengthening buildings. And then you already heard about the FAR limitation. We are doing the 1% for art. Have had an excellent experience working with RAC. They've been really wonderful to work with. The design evolution, I think, has been covered extensively. We went through multiple iterations with staff, the lengthy time of hearings, over 100 hours of design time. And I think that it was a very healthy process. As somebody who had not gone through that process before, as much as there were probably evenings I would have rather been elsewhere, in the end, we think it created a much better project and created an improvement, and the process worked. I want to talk very quickly about a couple of the appeal points. I'm going to turn over to Steve to talk about the parks, but the couple items. The stronger block structure, as staff noted, we moved the buildings closer to the avenues. We think that really did strengthen the block structure by pulling the buildings to the ends. In addition, it gave us these much larger parks. Excuse me. The ground floor. We went through some very challenging architectural gymnastics to lower the ground floors at these corner commercial spaces at 17th to really emphasize the commercial at that intersection of 17th and Front. We pulled the commercial to the front side. We lowered it in both on both sides.